taking a big chance on me.
I don't regret it one bit, he said. You feel like shit sometimes because you're pregnant. You've had morning sickness and you're fatigued. You're gonna have a few more complaints along the way, too. But all in all, it's going to be awesome. I love you.
You are too good,
she said, stroking his cheek. Apparently, I really am too good, he said, grinning. I blew right through birth control pills and nailed an egg.
Please don't get all cocky, she said.
Too late. I'm feeling very invincible right now.
Now what?
She asked. Now I think we convince Sam to take a little nap and get busy.
But I'm pregnant.
I hear it's even better that way.
Well, me getting accidentally pregnant sure hasn't diminished your sex drive.
It has not.
I don't think he's ready for a nap, she said.
Sam yawned so big his open mouth almost swallowed up his face. He put his fist in his mouth and his head on Connie's shoulder. That's my son, Connie said. He'll be asleep by the time I get my boots off.
Sierra took the baby to his room.
I'm not sure I'm in the mood,
she said as she was leaving.
That's my favorite part, Connie said. Getting you in the mood.
Love is an able master. He teaches us to be what we never were before. Molière. Chapter 16. Dakota was experiencing an existence of calm and peace that he'd never really had before, at least not for days and weeks on end. Nothing about the army had been peaceful, even though there was much about it he'd loved. Even his most blissful days with Hasna were overshadowed by the challenges of their cultural differences. They hadn't come even close to figuring out how they were going to manage to be together long term. She would never give up her work, and he wasn't sure what he'd do without the army. But as August arrived, life had never seemed more settled. Sedona was back home in Connecticut, in the hands of a good doctor, sleeping at night. Sometimes during the day as well, she said with a touch of laughter in her voice. And counseling up the nose. Bob and me, individual, group. I'm so overloaded with counseling, I couldn't even begin to tell you if it's working. But she felt all right. There was no panic in her voice. Sierra was looking forward to the court appearance at the end of the month that would settle their adoption of Sam. Elizabeth was pulling herself up on the furniture and had four teeth in the front of her mouth. They looked huge when she smiled. Sully had come to think of Sierra as another daughter. It wasn't so long ago, when Maggie was single, that he'd thought he'd never experienced the joy of grandparenthood. Now here he was with a little one on each knee. The happiness Dakota found when he was able to spend time with Sid soothed his soul. When he made love to her, it rocked his world. He picked Sid up at her house early on Saturday evening. They went together to the soup kitchen, something he particularly looked forward to. The other volunteers had become friends, even though there was no socializing outside of their volunteer night. And he'd grown a fierce admiration for Sister Mary Jacob, who put so much energy into caring for others.
"Why couldn't you be my mother, Mary Jacob?" The Pope forbade it. She slung back easily.
Dakota and Sid were sharing a laugh over Sierra's recent shock and Connie's puffed-up excitement as they walked into the food hall. Before they even got to their aprons, they spotted a familiar face. Neely, smiling beautifully, positioned behind the pan of potatoes with a spoon in her hand.
"Oh my God," Sid said.
"That's it,"
Dakota said.
"That's no accident."
"It can't be. I'll talk to Sister," Sid said, heading for the kitchen.
Dakota just stood there inside the door for a moment, and then he followed Sid. By the time he found them having a private talk in the corner, he picked up the words stalking and vandalism.
"You think this woman is bad news, Dakota?"
Sister Mary Jacob asked.
Definitely. She accused me of assaulting her when nothing could be a bigger lie. According to people who've known her, she lies quite a bit. If her lips are moving, you should suspect something. I'm afraid we're not going to stay. Sid has Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. Put us on another night.
The Saturday night crowd are your friends. I'll move her. We'll get by without you tonight. We have enough people to serve and clean up. I'll see you both next weekend.
I don't know if she's crazy or just determined and obsessed. You better be careful, Dakota warned.
Don't worry about me, Mary Jacob said. I have friends in high places.
That almost makes me want to stay, hearing you say that. You can't just rely on prayer.
You naive boy, she said. I know karate, and I know the police chief. She's not going to give me any trouble. I'm a nun, for God's sake. Not that anyone would know it by looking at her.
If anything goes strange with her, call us, Dakota said.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens when I schedule her on another night. You two go on. I'll tell the others you had something come up, suddenly.
I might not be available next week, Sid said. I have a few things to do out of town.
Dakota shot her a look. She'd been saying she hoped to spend a few days at her old job, helping out her former boss with something, but they hadn't talked specific dates. He was secretly hoping it just wouldn't happen.
Don't worry about it. We'll get by. Go now, before we draw a crowd.
Dakota said hello to a couple of people in the kitchen, shook a couple of hands, made some excuses, and promised to see them later.
Let's go, he said, taking Sid's elbow to steer her out.
He made it a point not to look back at Neely. He wondered how the hell she found out about the soup kitchen.
He drove away. Let's get closer to home and get a drink. How about that?
I'll have a glass of wine, she said.
Maybe two, since you're driving.
Jesus, that's so disturbing.
I just don't get it, he said.
Me either.
Look, I think you're a hunk, but seriously? What's she gonna do with you when she gets you? Sid pondered aloud. You're mad as hell. This doesn't have happily ever after for her stamped on it.
This is a first for me, he said. So, you've made travel plans?
I've been talking to Rob about it, but hadn't nailed anything down. But seeing Neely at the soup kitchen, I think now is an excellent time for me to take that trip. And it would give me peace of mind if you'd agree to stay with Cal while I'm gone. I don't want to think of you alone at the cabin.
I'm armed.
Even more reason. Cody, I don't want to even imagine you shooting someone.
I hate to break it to you, but in wars.
I know, but this isn't that. Yes, she said. We're at an interesting juncture. A crossroads. This is the time for me to look at my past and see if I can reconcile it. And maybe decide where to go from here. You should do the same. Then we should talk about what will happen next with us.
Together?
He asked hopefully.
Are we going to talk about where we go together? Because I'm not ready to give you up.
We'll work this out. And we should figure out what to do about Neely. This has to stop.
I'll call Stan tomorrow.
Tomorrow is Sunday, she reminded him.
I know where to get his cell number, and I'll ask Cal to help me with this. He knows everything about the law.
She sighed heavily. I'm not running away, Cody. Dr. Faraday asked me specifically if I could come in and consult. I'll be paid. He genuinely wants my input. He trusts me.
Just a few days?
Let me see what I'm dealing with. I promise to keep you informed. We'll talk every day.
Why does it have to be you?
He asked, his voice demanding. I was very invested in his project. I know what I'm doing. At least I did before a year of slinging drinks.
You're saying you're the only one qualified to do this? Now, when we're just getting around to talking about us?
She was very quiet. Yes, she said quietly. This is a good time for me to go back there, see what I really want, need. After a moment, she said, maybe you should just take me home. He grabbed her hand. Please, Sid, come home with me tonight. If you're sure, I can't say no to you. That's what I'm counting on, he said. Sorry I barked. I'll keep my head. Please. I think right now we need to be supportive of each other. We need to not go crazy. God, we've dealt with enough craziness. They were quiet for a long spell.
I have some of your favorite wine at home. Let's skip the bar and go to the cabin. Let's get our heads on straight. We're a little shook up, I think, Dakota said.
I think so, she agreed. There was no reason to get up early. It was Sunday morning. The bar would be open later. Rob and the boys would probably sleep in. Dakota made himself bacon and eggs while Sid had her fruit and oatmeal. It was 10 before they cracked the cabin door. The first thing they saw was the paint on the Jeep's hood was burned off and full of bubbles.
Stay here, Dakota said.
He took a couple of steps toward the Jeep, then stepped back to the doorway. He pushed Sid inside and locked the door.
Acid, he said.
He pulled out his phone and dialed 911. Then he opened his laptop, signed on, and looked at the video from the security camera. He scrolled through hours before she came into view. It had been nearly dawn. The image was perfectly clear thanks to the camera's night vision. Infrared LEDs.
It's gonna be a busy day,
Stan said to the small gathering inside Dakota's cabin. Dakota sat at his desk, laptop open. Stan, Cal, Officer Glenda Tippin, and Sid all looked over his shoulder at the screen.
Dakota, can you download this and email it to me? Stan asked.
Sure, he said. Now what? Do we get to arrest her?
Sure, but that's not going to be very satisfying. It's malicious destruction of private property, and at the end of the day, it'll probably be a fine. You can take her to court for damages, but what we really want is to make her go away. See, I've been doing a little checking. Ms. Benedict has a record. Sort of.
Sort of?
Well, there have been 2 restraining orders that I can find. She's broken into a house and created some havoc, destroyed some property, followed people. She gets in trouble, blows it off. She's a poser. She slides into communities and groups, invents a new Neely, attaches herself, makes a nuisance of herself. She gets fined, gets sued, throws money at her problems.
Yeah.
Madam comes from a rich family, and apparently she can buy off her victims.
Good, Dakota said. I'll take some of her money. The damage to the Jeep is considerable.
Agreed. But what troubles me the most is her playing around with dangerous items like knives and acid.
Stan shook his head and ran a hand through his sparse hair.
Jesus. I'm no genius, but I think she's escalating. And I want her the hell out of my town.
Do we even know what she's done? Sid asked.
Yeah, I know some things, Stan said. She claimed a man led her on. I don't know what he did or if he did anything at all, but he was married. Neely put the family through quite a bit for a long time until they moved. Then there was someone she met in a yoga class, a woman, a single woman. Neely wanted to be her best friend, stalked and pestered and created mischief until the woman got a restraining order. Apparently she did things like break into the woman's house, did her laundry, set her table, prepared food left in the refrigerator. My wife asked, what do I have to do to get her interested in me? I wouldn't press charges. 4 kids. Oh, my wife doesn't have much of a conscience if housework and cooking are involved. She'd sleep with the devil. I've talked to Neely's older brother. When I asked him if he knew a woman named Neely Benedict, he asked, what did she do now? Our short conversation suggested she's been like this since she was about 5. No empathy or conscience whatsoever. Very spoiled. Very entitled. I suggested it would help mightily if they'd cut off her bottomless pit of money, and he said he's not feeding her family money. She's getting paid out of a trust. Oh, and her brother doesn't want her back. Great, Dakota said.
She said she was invested in small businesses around Timberlake. But I sure can't find anything about that, Sid said.
Oh, she's made herself well known around town, stopping in this business and that, acting like an heiress looking for a home for her money. But these are pretty simple folks around here, and they're not looking for a partner or investor. I guess we just don't think like that.
Stan laughed.
Can you imagine this fancy woman driving out to Sully's to try to entice him into letting her buy in?
Do we even know where she lives? Cal asked.
I'm not just some hick cop, Stan said. Of course I know. Though I admit, work is harder when the suspect tells about half the truth. She lives in Aurora. Nice house on the country club golf course. I'm friendly with the Aurora chief and the state trooper captain. We like to help each other out when we can.
Officer Tippin cleared her throat.
All right. No need to try to keep me honest, Tippin. I get most of my computer help from Castor. So what?
Do you have a plan, Stan? Dakota asked.
I do, indeed. I plan to appeal to her sense of fair play. When she comes to me to discuss the situation, I'll offer to allow her to make restitution. She'll want to do that. Then I'm going to suggest Timberlake isn't right for her.
Swell, Dakota said, not very encouraged.
Meantime, until we get our differences straight, I'd like you to stay somewhere else. This cabin is awfully isolated to be at the hands of some loony woman with acid. Jesus, I can't even let myself think about the possibilities.
He'll stay with us, Cal said. Then he looked at Sid.
Plenty of room for you too, Sid.
Thanks, she said. Then she exchanged glances with Dakota. He knew immediately. She wasn't hanging around for this. A tow truck was called, and eventually everyone had dispersed. Dakota and Sid rode back to Cal's house with him. Then Dakota borrowed Cal's truck to take Sid home.
Can we just talk a bit? She asked. Can we park somewhere and talk?
You know, I'd always say yes to parking with you, he said.
She could tell it was all fake cheerfulness. He knew what was coming.
Cody, none of this is your fault. But I don't want to be in the middle of it, she said. With any luck, Stan will have this sorted out, and you'll be done dealing with the crazy one. This is a perfect time for me to get this trip out of the way. I'm very loyal to Dr. Faraday. I've been trying to help him sort out a problem via computer, but going there to my old lab and my old colleagues will serve more than one purpose. I should know if I want to go back to that career field. I did train for it for a long time, and I should know if I can make peace with the past. That's the only way a person can move on.
And what else, Sid?
He asked.
Do you need to know if you'll miss me?
She smiled gently. I know I'll miss you. This will be good for us. We should see how we feel about things after a brief separation.
Didn't we do that while I was in Denver looking for Sedona?
Kind of. But you were challenged with an important mission. I need to do the same thing. It's been sneaking up on me, needing that important mission. I have to see how that feels.
It was so perfect for a while, wasn't it?
He said, running a knuckle along her peachy cheek.
Like a time out from the real world. I know you have more important things to do than 10 bar. I should probably stop pretending I'm a garbage collector.
You don't have to be in a hurry, she said. I hear snow plowing is fun.
What really happened, Sid? Was it just your lousy husband?
It was mostly him, she insisted. I think I'd been working way too hard, playing and relaxing way too little.
I was too alone. It happens to people like me, you know? I was working in a university. I watched brilliant professors go off the rails. When the work is meaningful, it can get intense. When it gets too intense...
How do you keep that from happening?
He asked. I have some ideas. Coming to Colorado to be with family gave me balance. Working in Rob's bar gave me people. Then there's you. She leaned over and kissed him. Now that I've been with you, I have a new perspective. A jackass like David could never catch me now.
Good to know, he said.
Cody, if I'm going to go to L.A., I want to go now. I feel bad about abandoning you before Neely is rounded up and stopped, but you have your family to shore you up. And I'd only get in the way. Now that she knows we're together, she's getting more destructive. I'm gonna fade out for a week or two. He laughed sarcastically.
It was a few days. Now it's a week or two.
I'll talk to you. Let's see how long it takes Stan to do something about Neely.
I don't want you to go, he said. I also don't want you to be anywhere near her.
You went to Australia and walked for a month, she said. That was your way of letting go of the past. What I'm doing shouldn't panic you. For me, this is like a good workout. He shook his head.
You are such a beautiful nerd.
It'll go by fast.
When do you think you'll leave?
He asked. I'm going home to look up flights, she said. The sooner I go, the sooner I'm back.
I just want to be sure you're safe, he said.
She laughed. There's so much security in and around that computer lab, it's almost ridiculous.
Where will you stay?
He asked. I'm not sure, she said. I'll email Dr. Faraday's assistant and ask her to set up something. Could be anything from a hotel to guest housing. It'll be perfectly safe and comfortable.
If you want me to go with you.
God, you'd be bored out of your mind. You couldn't get clearance into the lab, and I'm sure I'll be putting in long hours. No. Let me do this. It's not as scary as you think. I'll be back.
Convince me,
he said, reaching for her.
Kiss me like I have nothing to worry about.
My pleasure, she said. Sid was able to arrange a flight out on Monday, and Dakota drove her the 2 hours to Denver to catch her flight. Then she generously loaned him the use of her car, since his was going to be in the shop for quite a while. He'd barely arrived back in Timberlake when his phone rang, and he saw it was Stan.
What's up, Chief?
He asked.
I wondered if you had time to stop by the office before close of business. I just want to give you a heads up.
Can't you just tell me on the phone? Dakota asked.
I can't, sorry. You need to see something.
I'll be right there, he said. The sooner we get this over with, the better.
Dakota walked into the small storefront police station to find Stan and Officer Cantor grinning as they looked at the computer screen.
Just so you're ready, Dakota, tomorrow at midnight, this goes out on social media.
There was the surveillance video of Neely pouring acid on his car, coupled with a sliver of the video from the alley. Her face was much more recognizable in the dark alley video when it was put together with the better, more clear camera video from Dakota's cabin.
So? We formed a nice little collective of small towns in the area, including Vale and Aurora, who will launch this public service announcement, looking for this woman.
Dakota was not impressed.
What good is that gonna do?
You on Facebook or Twitter, Dakota?
I have a Facebook page, but I never look at it. I keep up with people, though, just not that way.
You are behind the times, Stan said.
Like over 12 years, Paul Cantor said. I thought military men used it all the time.
I guess most of them do, he said.
So what do you expect to happen?
Honestly, we expect to bring her in, that's what. Her friends and neighbors are going to recognize her, share it. She might see it herself. Most police departments have active social media connections helping them alert the public about important issues, encourage people to call in suspicious criminal activity, keep the dialogue open. All the TV stations have social media. They want their audience to talk to them. A lot of them will pick up this request to identify this woman. It'll probably make the news. But we know who she is, Dakota said. Stan and Paul both chuckled. We do, don't we? Stan said. And pretty soon, everyone will. We might be this little out-of-the-way town, but I expect at least 75% of the population has Facebook and Twitter. Hell, that's our president's favorite form of communication. Though you gotta ask yourself. He cleared his throat. Your stalker is going to be exposed.
Dakota was silenced for a moment.
Aw, shit. She's gonna burn my house down, he said. It's on the Timberlake police page, buddy. Just camp at Cal's a while longer till we hear from the lady. And I'd bet my retirement we'll be hearing from her quick, Stan said.
Dakota sighed. He wasn't encouraged.
You guys are just a bunch of candy asses, he said. Wouldn't it be a lot more effective to go cuff her and charge her? I might do that eventually, Stan said. Right now I'm thinking long term. Oh, man, Dakota said. I'm truly fucked.
When Dakota got back to his brother's house, he helped himself to a cold beer. Cal emerged from his office, took note of Dakota's beer, and got one for himself.
What's the latest? Cal asked. Stan's planning to catch her with Facebook.
Cal whistled.
Crafty, he said, a facetious tone in his voice. You think maybe Stan's been police chief too long?
Sierra sat on the exam table in a paper gown. She swung her feet, midway between hysteria and euphoria. There was a light tap and the door opened. A lovely woman around her age walked in, reading the folder. She smiled. Dr. Culver's name was embroidered on her white lab coat. It appears you've explained the mysterious fatigue, she said by way of a question. So the pregnancy stick says, Sierra answered. Congratulations! How do you feel? Nauseous in the morning, tired in the afternoon, and a bit worried.
About?
I was taking birth control pills, Sierra said. I looked it up on the internet. It says that's nothing to worry about.
For once, the internet's correct. The worry comes a bit later when you're aware that at least that particular pill isn't going to keep you from getting pregnant. You'll have to try something stronger, or different, or maybe double up. But you can cross that bridge when you get to it. Right now, I'd like to do a checkup.
To be sure I'm pregnant? She asked.
To be sure you don't have anything else going on.
I don't have an ultrasound and I'm not set up for a pelvic, but I can get that ready fast. If you want me to have a look.
Would you know for sure if you looked?
I trust those darn pregnancy tests to tell the truth. But I can get some other bases covered. Like rule out ovarian cysts, uterine tumors, etc. I just can't tell how far along without an ultrasound. I'll get some routine blood work done, a urine test, and we can find you an obstetrician.
I'm very worried about hereditary disease, Sierra said.
Dr. Culver put a blood pressure cuff around Sierra's arm and it automatically pumped itself tight.
Anything in particular? She asked.
My father is mentally ill. He isn't under the care of a doctor, but he has so many special friends, it's certainly schizophrenia.
Onset of that particular mental disorder isn't usually until the early 20s. You have years before something like that might show up.
Any other relatives with mental illness?
My sister has OCD and anxiety.
Not related to schizophrenia, she said.
Your blood pressure is fine. Let me go get my bucket. I'll draw your blood.
Bucket?
My supplies, she said. Be just a minute.
She exited and was back almost instantly. The doctor fixed the rubber band around Sierra's upper arm
and while she looked for a vein, she chatted. If you're having a lot of worry about mental illness, we can certainly fix you up with a counselor. But the bottom line is there is a 95% chance your child is going to be in excellent health and live to a ripe old age, provided you take care of yourself. There is a 3-5% chance he or she could develop a medical problem or have an accident. He could get meningitis or Lyme disease from a tick or fall in a backyard pool. You'll have to be on your toes, but you know that already. With you and Connie obsessing over the baby, I predict he or she will be strong and healthy and outlive you by many years. Of course, you could encounter something rare, something frightening. She popped another tube on the needle. A counselor could help you not be scared until you have some reason to be. And a counselor would also help you resist dreaming up shit. Oops, I apologize. Yes, the doctor has been known to swear. So sorry. Sierra was grinning. I like when you swear. I'm trying to quit. So I'm going to make sure you're not anemic. Pregnant women suffer from that sometimes. And that you don't have diabetes or blood in your urine. And if you'd like me to, I'll measure your uterus and see if I can guess the sex of the baby. Really? She asked. Yes, I really do guess. But of course, I have absolutely no way of knowing. Do you want me to peek and see if your cervix is blue and your uterus just slightly swollen? Yes, please. I'll get a pap done while I'm at it, she said. Let me grab a nurse or someone. Would you be upset if I had the janitor? Never mind, she said, laughing. Of course it will be a nurse. And then she was gone again. Sierra was in love with her. 20 minutes later, Dr. Culver said, I'm guessing 4 to 6 weeks. Everything else in the pelvis is fine. And you can go ahead and stop taking those birth control pills. She laughed happily at her joke. Did Connie tell you we're in the adoption process? No, he didn't mention that, she said. On a waiting list? No, Sierra said. We're fostering a little boy, 6 months old. His mother was killed in a car accident, and we're adopting him with his maternal grandmother's approval. 6 months, Dr. Culver said. Wow. You think you were tired before. I know. Can you wave your magic wand and make this little surprise a girl? I charge extra for that, she said. Then the doctor leaned close, squeezed Sierra's shoulder and said, You're gonna have a wonderful family. Try not to worry. Try to enjoy all the enjoyable parts. There are many. And when you're at the end of your rope, you can come in and complain to me for $1 a minute. Sierra laughed. I can't count the number of patients I've had who get pregnant just a few months into the adoption process. It's amazing. I think holding a baby must make some women fire off eggs like rockets. Is it really only 3-5% that things go terribly wrong? Oh, sweetheart, I have no idea. I made that up. But I bet I'm close, if not right on. Sierra went home feeling especially blessed. It looked like they had a healthy and beautiful baby boy and a perfectly blossoming pregnancy. 2 days later, the doorbell rang, and her world crashed and burned. Mrs. Juergens stood there with another woman, introduced as the social worker from the county. Mrs. Juergens was a little hunched from her arthritis, the knuckles on her hands swollen and some of her fingers bent. I can't do it, she said. I can't give away my flesh and blood grandchild. Family not only need to consist of merely those whom we share blood, but also for those whom we'd give blood. Charles Dickens. Chapter 17. Sierra grabbed her chest. She tried to keep her head even though her heart was hammering. Come in, Sierra said. Let's talk about this.
I'm not gonna change my mind, the older woman said.
The social worker introduced herself. I'm Jean Blizzette, she said, and then she looked down. I didn't say come in and change your mind. Just please come in.
Sam's having a nap, but he won't be asleep long. Please, Sierra said, holding the door open. She thanked God the house was perfect. She thought about leaving the clean laundry on the sofa to fold, all the shoes scattered, dishes in the sink. But she'd had a spurt of energy and knew she'd better make use of it. There were even vacuum cleaner tracks on the carpet. Molly sauntered into the room, and when she saw they had company, her back end began to wag and wiggle ferociously. Molly, sit, Sierra commanded. Molly must have heard the panic in her voice because she instantly sat with no argument. Can I get you something to drink? At least a water?
I'll have a water, Mrs. Jurgens said, leaning on that cane with two hands.
Please, sit down. I'll get you both water.
When she got to the kitchen, she grabbed her phone off the counter and texted Connie.
Can you come home? They're taking Sam from us. I'll text Cal.
And to Cal, she texted,
Help! Sam's grandmother is here to take him away from us. Can you come?
Then she grabbed two bottled waters from the fridge and two glasses, taking them back to the living room.
I texted my husband, Mrs. Jurgens. I'm sure if he's not out on a call, he'll be here soon. Can you tell me what happened?
I just couldn't sleep over it, she said, tears coming to her eyes. I should at least try to take care of Sam. He's mine, after all.
I know it must have been a very difficult decision, but we won't take him away from you. You'll be a part of our family.
When she said the word family, she hiccuped a little.
My cousin's girl, Sandy, she said she'd stay with me and help with the baby. That should make it easier.
But what if you get sick? Sierra asked. Or have a particularly bad day and just can't lift him or hold him. He's already a hefty little guy.
I know you're disappointed, but I can't take a chance that I'd have terrible regrets. I had to make a decision before the adoption is final. Once it's final, you wouldn't want me to wait until then. Then we'd have to go to court, and I don't know that I'd do so well with the arthritis and all.
Mrs. Jurgens, you did a very brave thing, letting us apply to adopt him. I know you wouldn't have done that if you weren't suffering from medical issues. You wouldn't have had to. I know that. But where will you be in 5 years? I don't know too much about rheumatoid arthritis. Is it likely you can get stronger or weaker? Will Sam have to be given up then because of health reasons?
Well, there's the thing. If Sandy works out, maybe Sam will stay in the family.
Do you have a lot of confidence in that? Sierra asked nervously. How old is Sandy?
She's 19, Mrs. Jurgens said. My daughter was 20.
Tell me about Sandy, Sierra asked. Please?
My cousin's daughter, Mrs. Jurgens said. I've known her since she was born.
But I thought you didn't have much contact with your extended family, Sierra said. You said there were cousins, but they lived far away and you hadn't had much contact.
Sandy's people live in Nashville. She's looking for a chance to get away, make something of herself, get out of Tennessee. She'll like it here.
But what will happen in a year or 2 years when Sandy doesn't want to be a babysitter and caregiver? What will you do? At 2, Sam is still going to need so much tending.
Sierra turned her watering eyes toward the social worker.
Miss Blazette, have you talked with Mrs. Jurgens about all the possibilities?
Jean Blazette sat forward on the sofa.
We've talked at length. She wants to try to raise Sam. She wants to honor the memory of her daughter. I've suggested she leave Sam in foster care in that case.
You both could agree not to finalize the adoption. Her cousin's daughter could come and help around the house. You could bring Sam to her for visits, and if all is well and it looks like it could work out with her cousin's daughter, then she could claim her grandson permanently.
Yes, Sierra said. Leave things as they are a while longer. Let's see how...
But that's not what I want, Mrs. Jurgens said.
I spent about 5 hours on the phone with Sandy and her mother. We're all straight on what we'll need. If I have a baby to tend, my grandson, there will be added disability to help with the cost of having another member of the household. We've been working this out for a week. She's getting to my house today. She just called from Colorado Springs and said she's almost here. Please think this over, Sierra begged. I'm afraid that even with help, Sam could be too much for you. He's a lot of baby. He's the best baby in the world, really, but even the best baby? I've made plans, the woman said. Do you have furniture and supplies for him? Sierra asked. I'd like to have back what I gave you, she said. My neighbor loaned a crib. Jean brought a car seat for him. We'll need formula and... Sierra shot a glance at Jean Blissett. Why didn't you call me and warn me this was going to happen? We were talking about it, trying to work out the details, and then Mrs. Jurgens decided she wanted to pick him up today. She didn't ask me to come along, but I didn't want you to have questions and not be here to answer them. I had to move around some appointments, but I wanted to be here for this. I know the shock is difficult. I wish I could say this sort of thing never happens, but... It happens all the time, Mrs. Jurgens said. My own kid was in foster care for a couple of years way back when. I had some money problems. I got it straightened out and got her back.
Oh, dear God, Sierra said.
You'll need a little time to put together a bag for him, Ms. Blazette said. I brought a gym duffel for you to use if you don't have one.
We're going to wait until my husband and brother get here, Sierra said.
Why? Mrs. Jurgens said.
My husband loves his son, ma'am. I'm not letting him leave this house without Connie here. And my brother is my lawyer. Hopefully he's on his way. Let me check my phone.
Sierra went to the kitchen and picked up her phone.
Yes, they're both coming.
Get him right now, Mrs. Jurgens demanded. Grab some diapers and clothes. My neighbor can help with the rest. They have a teenager who drives. He can come back here and pick up things. I'm not waiting around. I know the law. I know my rights.
He's asleep, Sierra said.
The woman was so dispassionate that Sierra became afraid of what she or this cousin might be like if Sam wasn't easy, wasn't perfect, if they were tired or inconvenienced.
Please, I beg of you, let's not end our relationship like this in one afternoon. Let's go more slowly. Let me care for Sam. Bring him to you for visits. Have some trial time to see if you really want to take on a full-time baby.
No, Mrs. Jurgens said. Would you like to pack his things, or should I just go get him out of his crib right now?
Don't do that, she begged. He'll be cross if you wake him. Connie will be shattered if you just take him without...
Then get him, she said, giving her cane a stamp on the floor for emphasis. Sierra jumped.
I'll get some of his things ready, she said weakly.
I'll help, Jean said, standing to follow Sierra. When they got to the baby's room, Sierra turned on the social worker.
My God, you have to know how terrifying this looks. Mrs. Jurgens isn't capable of taking care of a heavy, rambunctious little boy. And this cousin? We don't know anything about this cousin.
I'm going to try to keep an eye on things. But remember, she's not under the scrutiny of child welfare. She hasn't done anything wrong, and she is his closest living relative.
She hasn't done anything yet, Sierra said. She's mean and careless.
I'm afraid I'm without options, Mrs. Boyle. She can refuse to complete the adoption process at any time. But I will check on her. On them.
This can't be happening, Sierra said. We love him so much. He's so happy with us.
I'm sorry. Let's put a few things in the duffel for him. Let's at least make sure he has what he needs. Tears rolled down Sierra's cheeks.
I can't,
she squeaked. Yes, come on. Here we go, Jean said. She opened the duffel on the changing table and filled it with disposable diapers, wipes, onesies, pajamas. She went to the bureau and opened a drawer to reveal a full complement of little outfits. Can you tell me which ones came from his grandmother, so we can give them back? Sierra felt as though she was wading through quicksand as she took the few steps to the bureau. She picked through the stacks and pulled out a few small items.
He's grown since he came to us. I don't think these will even fit him anymore.
Can you please part with some clothes that will fit? Shoes? Not for her, for him. Some fussing and squirming sounds came from the crib.
This can't be happening,
Sierra said, lifting Sam into her arms and snuggling him close.
Oh, God.
Sam protested, being hugged so tightly, and he started to cry. Let's get his things together, Jean said. How about some formula and baby food? Just enough to get them through a couple of days?
I need to change him,
she said, her heart ripped to shreds.
He's gonna be hungry. Please, can I change and feed him? Please?
The sound of the front door opening and closing could be heard. What's going on here? Sierra! Sierra! Connie burst into the baby's room and enfolded Sierra and Sam in his big arms. What the hell?
The adoption isn't final,
Sierra said, choking on the words.
They're taking him away.
Maybe not, Connie said. Cal is on his way. He's calling Mrs. Juergens' lawyer.
Connie, please,
she sobbed.
Please don't let her take him. Go talk to her, please. Please. She hates me.
Did he just wake up? Connie asked. Sierra nodded against his broad chest. He's soaked, Connie said. Go ahead and change him. I'll talk to Mrs. Juergens. By the time Connie was back in the living room, Sierra heard her brother's voice as well, both of them pleading rational arguments, trying to change her mind, dissuade her from taking the little boy. Sierra, do I have to take the baby? Jean asked. Shall I change him and make him a bottle? Are you too upset to...
I'll do it,
Sierra said. She carried on, changing him, finding some outfits that would fit him, and dressing him in one, putting his bitty shoes on his feet, crying the whole time. Her emotions had Sam fretting, whimpering and wiggling around, making it all the harder. She carried him to the kitchen to find a bottle. Jean had followed her, raiding the baby supplies in the kitchen and adding some to her duffel. Can we have the rest of this formula? Jean asked. Cereal and jars of fruit? You don't seem to have much.
Sam eats food I make, Sierra said. I just have these jars for those days I don't have time to make his food for him. He likes mashed bananas and oatmeal. He likes to pick Cheerios off his tray. I cook his vegetables and smash them with a fork. He loves potatoes. He loves smashed sweet potatoes. I make applesauce, she said, ending with a sob.
A short distance away, Connie and Cal continued to argue with Mrs. Juergens, pleading with her to give the Boyles a few days to prepare, asking Mrs. Juergens why she hadn't contacted her lawyer to tell him she was backing out of the adoption. Sierra gave Sam his bottle while they argued. And then Mrs. Juergens had had enough.
Do I have to call the police to get my grandson turned over to me?
The room went suddenly still, quiet.
Don't get crazy, Cal said. Is there nothing we can do to make you reconsider? This young family is heartbroken, as you can see.
As heartbroken as I was to learn my daughter was dead? I have to do this. I can't give up my grandson.
Will you at least call your lawyer? Cal asked.
I'll call him, she said. Not in front of all of you.
Okay, Cal said. Let's not make things harder. I want you to hear me on this, Mrs. Juergens. The Boyles are very bonded with your grandson. They want nothing so much as to give him a strong, loving family and to watch him thrive. If you get him home and have a moment of doubt, please don't hesitate to call on any of us. We'd all be happy to step in and help. We've all grown to love the boy.
Connie went to Sierra. She sat on a kitchen chair in the corner of the room, as far away from them as she could get.
Come on, baby,
he said gently.
Let me have Sam.
She held him against her shoulder. She shook her head.
No,
she said.
No, Connie, no.
Baby, we don't have a choice,
he said, gently pulling the little boy into his arms.
No,
Sierra cried.
Oh, God.
Connie carried the baby to Mrs. Juergens, kissed him on the head, and handed him over. Mrs. Juergens struggled to hold him in one arm and hang onto her cane with the other. For a tense moment, it looked like she might drop him, but she managed to get out the door. Jean Blazette scrambled along behind, opening the back door of the car for her and helping her get the baby situated. They could hear Sam crying as they took him away. Mrs. Juergens driving her car. When the sound of the car engine could no longer be heard, the house was silent but for the sobbing of Sierra. Connie went to her and pulled her into his arms.
Thanks for trying, Cal,
he said.
I'm not giving up, Cal said. I've left messages with her lawyer. Maybe he can talk some sense into her. Thanks. We'll take any help we can get.
He dropped back onto the couch, holding Sierra on his lap.
I'll stay home the rest of the shift. I just have to call my captain and tell him. He'll understand. What can I do for you right now?
Cal asked.
Can I get some food together? I can call Maggie and ask her for a tranquilizer or something.
Connie was stroking Sierra's hair, rocking her.
Nah, Sierra's pregnant. She won't take anything now. I'll take care of her.
Pregnant? Cal said in a whisper.
An accident, but we're happy about it, Connie said. Okay, we're not happy about anything right now. It's safe for you to leave. I can take care of my wife. I'll keep at it, Connie.
Great.
Just don't tell us anything that will get our hopes up, only to have him torn away from us again.
He kissed Sierra's head.
We love him. We want him to be okay. Me too,
Cal said. Sierra cried for hours. An early evening, at the urging of Connie, she agreed to eat a little canned chicken soup and drink some water for the baby's sake.
You can't get dehydrated. It could hurt the baby.
I can't stop crying, she said.
That's okay,
he said.
I'm here. Let's take care of you and the baby. We don't need any more heartache.
He spooned the soup into her as if she were the baby.
I've gotten a bunch of texts, he said. No one wants to get in our space and bother us. They don't want to call and wake anyone if they might be sleeping. But there are offers of food, company, prayers, anything.
Cal told the family, Maggie, Dakota, and Sully.
My captain told some of the guys. Lisa and Rafe want to offer comfort when you're up to it. They're waiting to be told the coast is clear.
Do you want company? She asked.
Because I don't. I don't need company, he said. I need to take care of what's left of my family.
After a few hours and a little food and water, Sierra fell into an exhausted, troubled sleep. She woke in the dark of night and the clock by the bed said it was 2 a.m. She heard some fussing, and for a split second, she thought the baby was back, fussing in his crib. She sat up with a start. A dim light from the living room illuminated the crack in the bedroom door. She pulled herself out of bed and went toward the sound. She found Connie sitting bent over on the living room chair, his head pushed into a soft toy, muffling his cries. He sat, alone, sobbing his heart out. She went to him, kneeling at his feet, rubbing a small hand over his back. Connie raised his head.
We didn't give him any of his toys.
We'll take some to him, she said. Come to bed and let me hold you.
I'm okay, he said, sniffing back his tears, wiping his cheeks with the back of his hand.
Neither one of us is okay, she said. Come to bed with me. I need to take care of what's left of my family.
He stroked her cheek.
You okay? God, not at all, she said. But we're gonna hang on to each other and get through this. There isn't anything they can throw at us that will break us, because we're a really powerful team. A lot of tears on this one, he said. Yeah.